Well, good morning, everybody. Thanks for coming out to our session, ITIL in the Private Cloud. Given that I put ITIL in the title of the slides, we've ended up with about six times the attendance we expected, which is good. My name is Gareth James. I'm a senior consultant with Microsoft Services, specializing in System Center and Private Cloud. And with me is Mark Dowling, who's one of our service management consultants, so deals in process and organizational change. So what are we going to go through today? First of all, we're going to have a look. Mark's going to take us through the talking about change management and in particular about the Change Advisory Board or the CAB and our observations around how is that currently working in organizations today? How is that process currently being applied? And then say, okay, well, what do we need? This is the way it's currently working. What do we need out of change management? What is change there to do? What do we get out of it? Why do we do it? And you know, what are our reasons for going through this process? And then to look at it from both a private cloud perspective, so within the paradigm of private cloud, how is that process going to work for us? Is it going to work for us the way that we're currently doing it, or do we need to have some thinking changes? And also from an IT pros perspective, because I'm assuming that a lot of you in the room are IT pros and are looking at change, not necessarily from an adversarial point of view, but I'm assuming that probably most of you aren't change managers. So as an IT pro, what do I need out of change? What do I need the process to bring to me? And then thinking about, okay, well, how do we apply this to private cloud? Are they compatible? And what thinking shifts do we need? And then lastly, we're going to go through a scenario walkthrough to demoing a private cloud system that I showed a little bit in my last session, just to really focus on the process component of that to say, well, how do we use this system and how do we use the technology to achieve the process outcomes that we want whilst maintaining all of the benefits of private cloud like agility? So I will now hand you over to Mark to talk to you very skillfully about change management.
Thanks, Gareth. As Gareth said, my name is Mark Dowling. I'm a service management consultant. My role is a non-technical role within Microsoft Services. It's about the management and control of our system. So getting the optimal management control of our technology such that it delivers the most benefits. And from a private cloud perspective, change is really important in that space. To start off with, I just want to have a quick review sort of what change management is and in some ways what it isn't. It's a control process. It's used for making decisions. And it happens all the time. I'm not the biggest advocate of MOF, the Microsoft Operations Framework, but what MOF really does well is puts change management as part of your managed layer. It permeates everything we do, and it helps us make decisions. And those decisions are based on three things. In fact, I could go as far to say every decision you make in whatever sphere you make it in is based on these three things. What's the cost of making this decision? What do I get out of it having made that? What are my benefits? And what risks am I exposed to as a result? And strip away everything that the various frameworks have, and that boils down to those three elements. If I make this change, what's the cost in terms of resources? Have I got to buy new resources? How are my resources being used or not being used?
Yeah. Or was I doing that without the mic? I didn't notice. Oh, well, there you go. What's the cost in terms of resources and opportunity costs? If they're doing this change, what are they not doing and what's that costing me? There's got to be a benefit for doing it. All right? We don't do something for nothing. I don't, for example, take it down to my personal life. I don't go down to the shops for nothing if I choose to make that be my decision. There's a reason for doing it. And there's got to be a benefit to the organisation as a result. And there's two aspects of the risk side of it from a change assessment perspective. What's the risk of not achieving those benefits? If I do this and I don't get those benefits, then I've cost myself something that I probably didn't want to do. And what's the likelihood of the change being successful through its implementation? Is it a risky proposition to implement this? Now, what we're trying to do with change is minimise the impact. And by minimise the impact, sort of an odd way to say it, because we're doing change to have an impact. We're after a benefit, so we're definitely after an impact, but we want to minimise the negative impact. We don't want this to cause undue strain and pain to the organisation as a result. So we want to coordinate our changes, make sure that the impact is understood, accepted, and people can get on with doing what they're good at. We want it to be seamless, particularly to the business. We want it to give them the benefits they're after without causing too much strain on what they normally do. And it doesn't operate by itself, as we're all aware. It's supported by config management, provides us with information on terms of the impact of a change, those relationships. The evaluation, the change evaluation process, giving us a way of assessing change and looking at those three aspects in cost, benefit and risk. And release and deployment is the process of implementation. So a sort of scene setting about what change management is. The reason for doing that is as we go back to the, when we get to the demo later on, highlight these points and how we actually do this through the change management process within a private cloud. Oops, wrong way. Wrong button. My mistake. Okay, some of my observations in terms of the application of this process. So for me, particularly with the ITIL and ITSM getting traction in the early last decade, there were some good reasons to really put change management front and centre. And one of the ones is there was a lot, unfortunately, a lot of perceived cowboys, things that were implemented and had massive impacts on our environment. So change management has helped us rein in that impact. We have less catastrophic implementation failures. We get more success out of it. There's more control. People know what's going on. Changes are much better communicated to the business. And we talk to the business a lot more as a result of this process. So that's really, really good. And we want to retain that and make sure that we continue to do that. However, one of the struggles that I get is, going into consulting on this, is the perception of a cumbersome process. It takes a long time to get through, and it's sort of set beside the work that our IT pros do. I want to get in and fix this or implement this system, and then there's this beast of a process that I've got to work through that's a pain. I don't really want to work through that. It gives me additional work. I understand the concept of that decision-making process, but this just seems like a massive overhead. It also has that perception, and it's not, I see it also as a reality, of not being flexible and agile. It doesn't meet the needs of our IT pros at the businesses all the time. Things like Gareth mentioned the CAB before, the CAB being that Tuesday or Thursday afternoon thing that's set in stone and you raise a change and you've got to wait till that meeting comes up before you can do your next step, which doesn't necessarily fit in with what the business wants, what IT wants to do, and that flexibility and agility. And Gareth will talk about the private cloud and how that sort of doesn't really work. Another issue for me is the consistency of the process being applied, particularly between how we manage change in projects and how we manage change in operations. They seem to be two different things. And if I'm in a small IT shop, I try to run change in a project and it's done a certain way, but when I flick back to my normal job, it's done completely differently. And there's no consistency. But it adds extra strain on our personnel resources to know two different ways to operate. So we want to try eliminate that as well, or make that better. The last one there on the bad is there's not enough standard change in my observation. I'd like to see most organisations have upwards of 50% of changes, particularly in IT operations, that are standardised. This is the way we do it. And it's known, understood and approved. We don't have to go back and recreate the way change is done. So I don't have to go back to a CAB or some form of authority and go, this is how we're going to do it, and then be challenged on that by someone who doesn't necessarily know and understand how that's done. We want those things to be standardised, approved, enable us to go through. And again, that's going to be pretty critical for us within a private cloud scenario, because most of the things are standardised in terms of the changes we make to the private cloud. The ugly, things we still struggle with. Because the process is cumbersome, I haven't come across an organisation where the process isn't bypassed at some stage. Staff will make a decision and go, it's a small change, I just want to get it done, we need it done now, doing all this paperwork or process is just getting in the way. And the staff member will make an individual decision to bypass the process. With the best intentions, I'm not saying that these people are doing it just to be... trying to do the wrong thing. They're trying to do the right thing, but see the process as an impediment to achieving that. We've got to make our process such that it's not an impediment, it's not something that's extra to do, but works into the way people do their work so we can avoid the process being bypassed. An example from my experience, I was working for an IT outsourcer, and one of our senior technicians, senior IT pros, was identified a flaw in the, or something that could be tweaked in the logon script. I'm sure you've heard stories like this before. Identified something that needed to be fixed in the logon script. Rather than raising the changes, working back late, it was a Wednesday night, so there was business day the next day, made the change to the logon script. Didn't go through all of that necessary testing and all the rest of it, didn't raise the change. No one knew what had happened. Forgotten, I don't know which way it was, either put a semicolon where it should have been a colon or the other way around at the end of one of the lines of code. He was working late, worked late until 2-3 in the morning, and had made a decision reasonably enough that he wasn't going to be in first thing in the morning. People started coming in at 8 o'clock and the entire organisation couldn't log in. No one knew, there was no record of the change that had happened, and it wasn't until he woke up to answer his phone, finally, or answer the message on his phone at 11 o'clock in the morning, that we're able to identify what the problem was. Now, this was an entire, I work in Canberra, so this is a federal government department that doesn't really shut down, I won't say which one it was, and they weren't able to log on until 11 in the morning, fundamentally stopped activities. But that's one of the consequences. It was an unintentional consequence. Why he did it was all for good reasons, but it caused a huge issue. So we still get those staff avoiding the process because it seemed to be an impediment. The last thing that I struggle with change is that accountability part, and particularly as it pertains to the cab, which I'll touch on next. What I find in cabs is we get a whole group of people together and we make a community decision. The issue for me with a community decision is it is difficult, if not impossible, to identify a single point of accountability. Oh, we all made the decision. All right, so when things do go wrong, you can't go, why did we do this? We can't identify that. No one's putting their hand up to be responsible and making sure and seeing it through. So even when trying to do the right thing and make it happen effectively, make the change work, we don't have someone who's really taking carriage of that and having that oversight and that accountability part to make sure it works. And for part of that, I laid the cause of that at the cab itself. So what I want to talk about now is, I keep pressing the wrong one. I think I'm holding it upside down. That would be why. Okay, is the change advisory board. First thing I want to say is the concept and what a change advisory board is, I'm all behind. It's just that. It's a change advisory board. It's supposed to assist a decision maker to make a decision on a change. Conceptually, it works. However, in order to implement that, and I'm going to put some blame at the industry or the part of the industry I work in terms of service management consulting, about a decade ago, consultants would go in and say, you need a cab. And so one of the things I could tick off as a consultant was, I've set up a cab in this organisation. And we'd set up these cabs and they'd have a routine agenda and a meeting and there'd be all these people. You need to invite people from the business, all these IT pros, senior management, and we'd end up with a cast of thousands. You'd have a lot of... Has anyone been into a cab like this? Just by a show of hands, who's been to a cab where there is a cast of thousands in there? Now, one of the issues that I see with that is a huge loss of productivity. You go in there, particularly as an IT pro, and I know something very specific about a certain system or a technology. And there's one change in this agenda of a meeting that's going on for 2 hours. And my contribution to that, I'm expected to be there from start to finish, and my contribution is less than 5 minutes worth of effort, but I've lost 2 hours of productivity as a result. It's almost untenable because we're not getting our staff to do their job they're good at. Gareth's got an example where which he'll go to where they ran two cabs a week and had the same consequence with each cab. In the cabs, because we invite these whole masses of people, we get two types of debates happening. First one, the technical debate. Is this the right thing to do? And so you've got the person proposing the change and this is how we're going to do it. And there's someone who's off in the area who feels, well, I've got to contribute to the cab. And I just want to challenge that technical part. I sort of have anecdotal and a limited understanding of what's going on there, but it doesn't quite make sense to me, so I'll ask a question. And they ask the question, it degenerates into a technical debate. We've got someone who doesn't quite understand, but has a little bit of knowledge to be dangerous. And you've got the person who's raising the change, who just wants to go, this is what we do. This is how it works. And it, again, not the best use of people's time. And then you've got the business people in there who are sitting through this discussion going, I really don't understand what's going on. I just want this to happen because it's what I need. We need it from a business perspective to facilitate a business process, up our capacity. We've got more staff coming on. It needs to be better. And at that, whilst that business discussion is happening about justifying why this change needs to happen, the technical people are switching off going, this doesn't really matter to me. We've got to get a better balance in terms of the cab. It's to a set meeting schedule. So if things need to happen in a hurry and we can't get it to that cab, what you tend to see is an emergency change raised that's not an emergency change. I've got to have a different... I've got to sort of abuse the process to get what the business needs. It's lacking that. The cab sets in stone having that regulated meeting an inflexibility that doesn't meet needs. So again, we've got to change this. If we go, and again, Gareth will talk more about the private cloud, the idea is that rapid deployment, being able to make things happen, that agility, this regular set meeting for things that are perceived to be major changes makes that difficult, if not impossible. The last thing I observe with cabs is some of that stuff doesn't happen. It's actually not about that decision-making process and getting information. What it is we've decided this is happening. We being someone else has decided we've got you all in a room because we're telling you this is the case. And it becomes a communication platform for the release as opposed to a decision-making authority. I'm sort of okay with that, but there's got to be better methods to get information out without dragging everyone out of their day-to-day job to pass information on. So we want to look at... we'll come back to some of these concerns about the cab and the ugly parts of change, and address them through the, and look at how we can address them as a result of understanding what do we actually want from the private cloud and what is it that IT pros want from a service management process, in this case change, to help them do their job as effectively as possible.
Thanks, Mark. So just to, before I get on to my slide, I'll just regale you with a couple of little anecdotes from my years being an IT pro and going through the cab process, having those cabs. As Mark said, one organisation that I worked in where I was there for a year, the cab was a religion. It was an absolute religion. And they had two cabs, one on Tuesdays, one on Thursdays, so twice weekly. It was good in the way that you only had to wait at maximum 3 days to get your change heard. But these cabs went for, if it was well conducted and people didn't get into those debates, it would go for 2 hours. That was usually the minimum. And you'd got two of those a week, so you're losing half a day out of your week sitting there, going through this list of change. And you'd get the 20-page printout of everything that was going to be discussed that day, and you just go through it line item after line item. There'd be about 50 people in the room. They had one of those dual rooms that had the big slide thing in the middle. They had to open that up in order to get all the tables around, fit everybody into the room, and everyone would be discussing these changes. And it would go. Right, this change is blah, 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 blah. And then, any objections? Glazed looks. Approved. Okay, what decision, what information has been facilitated in order to make a real decision? You have to question. And then usually about 20 minutes into the meeting, then we'd hear... There was a guy who used to sit in the back corner and go to sleep and snore for the entire thing. And this happened twice a week for a year. No one said anything. I think it just became part of the experience of being in the cab. There were people there with stopwatches. There it is. 10 minutes today. So you have to, when it gets to that point, you have to take a step back and go, Hank, this is crazy. Why are we doing it this way? And another quick anecdote, just because, we have to fill in time, one place I worked in. One of the contractors there was pretty much solely employed, not so much for his technical ability, but his ability to be able to get things through. The change process was so arduous in his organization that he knew all the people and knew how to speak to and the way to phrase things in order to get stuff through the process. And if he raised the change, odds are that it would get through. If somebody else raised it, you'd have problems. So this guy was kept on staff purely because he knew how to get stuff through the process. And again, you've got to ask, There's a direct impact. There's a direct cost impact to the organisation of you know, this kind of behaviour that stems out of these cabs. So that's just been my... I mean, I'm sure you've all had similar experiences. I'm sitting through cabs. And what I'm going to go through now is talk to you a little bit about, you know, the way we're thinking of doing things in private cloud and what private cloud is, and really saying, okay, for this, what we want to get out of private cloud, that type of regular agendaed meeting process is simply untenable. It just won't work. We can't do it that way anymore. So firstly, I'll just set the scene. What is private cloud? Just to give you a very, very quick and dirty. Those of you who are in my last session got a longer explanation, but and that one will be online if you didn't go, so you can check it out afterwards. Think of it, the base of it is a really well-managed virtualized environment. So you've got, you know, a pool of resources, you've got capacity in some kind of fabric, and then you're just simply provisioning services on top of that capacity. And that's the basis of it. But then private cloud brings a few other things to the table. The first one that it brings really at the front end, at the back end, brings self-service to the front end, and then brings chargeback or showback and usage consumption to the back end. So at the front end, when we talk about self-service, the critical point of this is its delegation of authority. To be able to say, well, I'm going to delegate the ability to do whatever. In the case of the system I demoed in the last session and what we'll be showing you today, it's an infrastructure as a service system that's all about provisioning virtual machines. So I'm going to delegate the ability to create a virtual machine outside of IT, because I don't want my IT guys being tied up doing routine tasks, the same thing, the same way, every time. I want to automate that and delegate the ability to somebody else who actually wants the service. I mean, more often than not, when an IT guy is provisioning a VM, does he want the VM? Not really. He wants to provide it to, you know, whatever project is, you know, producing a new line of business app or whatever it is. They're not the ultimate consumers. They're really middlemen. And it's about taking that middleman out in terms of the hourly task of doing it, but them still having control over the process and how that is actually executed and performed. So that takes me to the first bullet point up there, is to say, well, why do we do private cloud? We do it to try and reduce cost. It's all about, again, delegation of authority and very high degrees of automation. To get cloud, we need very, very, very high degrees of automation, and that's one of the secret sources to how we make this work. Mark was talking before about a standard change, and we really, what is this notion of a standard change? Well, it's the same thing that we do all the time. I mean, a great example in most organizations that is a standard change, even with the, you know, Leviathan process that is the cab, is antivirus deployment updates. I mean, how many orgs do you work in where they actually go through deployment of antivirus updates as, you know, in their chain? They don't. It's just seen as a business usual activity, and the guys just do it on a normal basis. How many times or how many people have worked in an organization where you spend ages building up the trust with the change board to say, no, that's you know, we can do this without a change approval. We do it the same way every time, and you do it, and everything goes right, and it's good. And then all of a sudden, one of those changes goes wrong. You know, someone decides, oh, I need to push out the new agent to boxes. That's antivirus. That's covered under that. I'll just do it. And they push out, you know, x86, or they pushed out x64, or they pushed out the wrong agent to a server instead of a desktop, or something like that, and then causes an outage. What happens? Change goes, knee jerk, right, everything to do with antivirus now comes through the cab. You've destroyed all that good work that you've done. So one of the keys to this is automation, to say, we're not just going to say that it's done the same way every time. It is done the same way every time because the system does it. We've done that automation and we know that it's going to follow exactly the same set of steps every single time. The other reason that we do private cloud is that increased agility. Again, this waiting of, I want a VM, how long is that going to take? Well, ideally, you want to press a button and get the service that you need spat out the other end in, you know, an hour or half an hour or however long it takes. You want that agility for it to be turned around very, very quickly. And without cloud, that's not really workable. Even in environments that are highly virtualized, and yeah, you can deploy a VM in 5 minutes, it's great. But more often than not, then the subsequent processes that need to be gone through, putting it in your asset management system, making sure all your agents are deployed, monitoring, antivirus, backup, all of these things quite often go to different siloed teams to check off all of that work. And what should be a very quick process ends up turning into, you know, a couple of days, and then go, oh, well, actually, if you want that VM, we've got to raise the change, but then we've got to wait for the cab, which is on Thursdays, and then they get approved, then it's 2 days after that. So it can take you a week. I mean, straight away, we spend all this money on the technology to give us this automation and this rapid deployment to only then be hamstrung by our processes and destroy that agility. The economic benefits of these things are based on that agility and being able to do these things rapidly. If you pay to put the technology in and then your process doesn't facilitate that agility, guess what? You've just wiped out all the economic benefits that you hoped to gain by doing it in the first place. And now the next point is, it was, if anyone was in the demo, Jeff's demo yesterday, you would have seen that sort of movement of VMs and how that's now becoming a real technical reality between being able to move VMs from on-premise to potentially, you know, a hosted provider or up into the Azure cloud. So again, this is the type of thing that, do we really want this to be considered a major environmental change? I mean, you need flexibility in this, and that movement may not be necessarily something that a human invokes. It could be an automated system that invokes it. You could be having a set of, you know, it's like a web application or something like that, and your web farm's getting hammered with requests, and you go, okay, well, I don't have my internal fabric can no longer service these requests. I don't have the capacity. I want automation to be able to kick in to say, you're running at this percentage of usage. I know I don't have any space left in the fabric. I'm going to provision extra boxes on the online service providers and they can take that spillover of capacity. It's that rapid elasticity, scale in, scale out that we're trying to get to with cloud. And if you inject a manual human approval process into that, you've just destroyed all your agility. You want these things to just burst out on demand. So these are the benefits to where we see benefit, the benefits to the cloud. So what do I need as an IT pro? What do I want from the change process? I mean, let's say for a second assume that I'm a respectful employee, and you know, I understand process is good, and I understand it's there for a reason, and we don't want log-on script outages like the story that Mark told. So I want to be respectful of the process. I want these things done properly. But by the same token, I want to do my job as effectively and as efficiently as possible, and what do I need in order to do that? Well, firstly, from a tools perspective, it would be really nice if it could actually integrate into the other systems that I use. That would be nice. One organization I worked, the change process was in 3270. It was a mainframe application, so you're going into a mainframe emulator to raise your change, right? Awesome. I love green screens. It makes me feel nostalgic. But if I want to integrate that change process into an automated system, it's extremely difficult, if not impossible. Or so expensive to do that it counteracts the benefit that you get out of doing it. So it'd be great if it could be integrated into the systems that I use. And when I say that, not just from my UI perspective, but also from a system perspective. If I've got a standard change which is automated, you know, do I want to be going in and updating the record in the change system to say that a status has changed? No, I want the system to do that for me. Because then, A, it ensures it gets done. Because quite often, you know, if you've got change process steps within a process, most often those changes will be ignored, right? If you're doing a 20-stage process and each stage of that is, I've got to go and update the ticket each time to know where it's at, how often does that get done? Hardly ever, right? You go, I'll wait till I get to the end and then I'll update it with the final status. And, you know, then halfway through, you know, someone shows you an amusing bunny video on YouTube or, you know, you get distracted and then it all goes out the window. The process needs to be out of my way. So, again, I want to be respectful of the process, but losing 4 hours, half a day, a week out of my time for literally 5 or 6 minutes of content delivery to an audience that doesn't understand what I'm saying just glazes over and goes, oh, okay, approved. You go, well, really, well, where is the benefit to the organization in that? Needs to be rapid and on demand. So I was talking before about some of the agility benefits of private cloud, rapid deployment, all of these types of things that we want. I need a process that is not on a fixed schedule. these Tuesday or Thursday meetings, it's just not going to work for me. If I need to do something, I want to be able to, out of the process, to be able to say, okay, well, who do I need? Who's a stakeholder in this? Who needs to be informed? Who needs the information to make that decision? I need to call those people together and make the decision and be done with it. Not all requests are created equal, fit for purpose. If I'm building a new cluster to facilitate extra capacity, that potentially is a more important change or something that requires a little bit more approval than, say, just provisioning a VM within that cluster. You know, this notion of this same process, whether you're ripping out half the infrastructure and replacing it, or you're making a two-line change of code, having the same level of importance placed upon it, again, is saying, is that the most efficient use of people's time? And I want less meetings. I hate meetings. Most IT pros do. And it's fine if you're there for a really productive reason and you're saying something that needs to be said and it's getting productive use of your time, but we've made the point a few times, sitting there for 2 hours for 5 minutes of content delivery, if you need to try and articulate this kind of change within your organization, a really good way of getting people to listen to you is to do some really basic arithmetic. Our IT staff are paid X dollars per hour on average. We are losing 4 hours a week to this change process for 5 minutes of productive content delivery. X times Y equals a great big fat ugly figure that managers listen to. So that's an effective technique that can be used. So I'm now going to pass you back to Mark, and he's talking about how do we apply this process within the constructs that I've talked about.
All right, so there's a few things that Gareth spoke about there from the cloud perspective and the IT pro perspective. So we need a new paradigm for change that's going to work within the private cloud. The first one for me is devolving that accountability. It reinforces that there is someone who's accountable for the change and making sure it's working. So I want a single point to be accountable and them to hold that decision making. So I want whatever it is, whatever the configuration item, the object that is going to be changed, I want a unique person to be identified as the owner of that and hold ultimate accountability for anything that happens to it, whatever change that might be. In order to facilitate and help that person make decisions, I want to establish CABs as needed. I want to be able to call in the experts that are going to give me, as a decision maker, the advice I need when I need it to make a timely decision. I don't want to be hamstrung by a set schedule. I want to say, okay, I need you, and you, because of your various expertise from business, capacity planning, availability, particular technology, whatever it might be. Give me what I need to know about this change, and I can make a decision quickly.
That's exactly what I asked for. See, he's listening.
Create standard change procedures. We need, as Gareth rightly said about the automation, a lot of what we do in private cloud is the same every time or can be automated to be the same every time. So let's establish those standard changes, and I'll drop to the last point, and make sure that they're automated. In making sure that they're automated, I also want to bake in whatever process is applicable to that change. So as I go through provisioning a virtual machine or creating a new tenant in the private cloud, which are the two examples we're going to walk through in the scenario, change management is integrated into what I do as an IT professional. I don't need to jump out of one system and go into another one to update changes. It is a fundamental and integral part. It gets that to the point Gareth was making, that it's out of my way. It's not something I have to do additional to. It's a part of. But we retain those key aspects, that decision making. Someone's going to make a decision and say this is a good thing to do, or we're going to go ahead with it, and it's going to balance those areas of cost, benefit, and risk. That's still there, and I can point to the person that's going to do that. Now, to be able to do that, one of the constraints which in the scenario we're going to walk through needs to be in place is good configuration management. We need to know what CIs we're managing and be able to uniquely identify who owns that. And we will demonstrate that to you through this. So, without labouring that, that's what we want to achieve. Let's jump into the demos. And show you how this can work using the System Center suite and within a private cloud scenario. Just to give it a bit of background as to what we're doing. Imagine a scenario where the businesses, the CIO, sat down with the senior executives and said, okay, we've got a number of projects that we could possibly do, having a look at what's in that in the possible projects. We're getting a lot of flack from the business about our finance application. So we need to start up. We've got a project to upgrade that application. So I'm going to approve that project. CIO's appointed the operations manager as a sponsor of the project. They hold accountability for the project, and a project manager's been put in place. They get together and go, well, how are we going to do this? Define our approach. And part of that approach is we want a slice of our private cloud in order to do build, test, and stabilise our particular new line of business or upgraded line of business app. All right. So they've documented that. They've worked out how they're going to manage change within the project. But the first thing they need to do is raise the change to get that tenant in the private cloud. I need that for this particular project. And that's what we'll walk through now.
Okay. Just to set the scene a little bit, well, actually, it's just a disclaimer for me if it all goes bad. This environment that you're currently looking at is actually a private cloud system that services has built. It's actually this environment is running out of a shared test lab in Redmond, in Seattle. So I'm double RDP hopping through VPN to get in there. So the screen refreshes are pretty awful. And it's also, like I said, it's also a shared environment. So someone could have come in 5 minutes before I was due to log in and gone and changed stuff and all the rest of it. So now, given that, and to make my life even more challenging, my video driver is doing funny things and I don't have it here. I only have it here. So I'm going to have to be craning my neck around and kind of half see what you're seeing and that sort of stuff. So with all that good fun established, so what we're looking at the moment is System Center Service Manager. And for our private cloud system that we architected, System Center Service Manager is the brain. It's the core part, and absolutely everything runs through Service Manager as a matter of the way that the way the system does what it does. So what we're looking at the moment is just the default out-of-box work items and change management. So from here, I'm just going to say create change request. That is so hard to read from here. Is that my major change
there? Yep.
So that's going to load the major change form. So what we're looking at is just the default out-of-box change record here, and I'm going to go into activities.
Yep. What you can see from the activities, it's hard to see everything there because of the way it reduces down, but the point here is that the process is the same. I haven't been to an organisation where their change process doesn't follow the same path. Someone requests it, someone then says, yes, that's a good thing to do, go ahead and build it, test it, make sure it works, then it goes to another authority, maybe the same person, maybe another person, to say, yep, deploy it, we go ahead and deploy it, we review the change and close it, and that's what the steps are there. What we want to look at is, if we can look at the RA2354 activity there, which is an approval activity. And what this activity enables us to do
screen refresh.
is
awesome.
That virtualized cab. You can see down the bottom there's reviewers. If this change comes to me as a decision maker, I can go ahead and go, I want these people to review it. I can also have this integrated through Orchestrator and linked into my Exchange environment and send them emails and go, please review this change. I need this information. Tell me what I need to know to make a value decision. And I can do that quickly. I'm still somewhat dependent on how quickly they respond, and you can also then set up SLAs or whatever timers on that to get timely response on that. But the system enables me to have that virtualized cab and get decisions in a timely manner, in a much quicker manner than a set schedule. So we can facilitate that through this. But what we'll jump to now is a standardized change that takes advantage of some of these features.
So what you saw there was just sort of the out-of-box major change request. We have within our private cloud system, we have a slightly customized one, which I'll now show you. Close that down. So there's more than one way to skin a cat. And within this system that we have, there's a couple of ways that you could do it. In this example, I want to put a new tenant into my cloud. So we don't tell you what a tenant means within the context of your organization. Each tenant could be a business unit. Each tenant could be a specific project that's being brought online, however you want to carve it up. So in this example, they've said that they want to replace the finance application. In my last presentation, the example I gave was one reason you really want chargeback or showback on your private cloud is to gauge your relative resource usage within an organization. And you might say, well, I don't charge money internally. So you know, what difference does that make to me? I don't need to know who's consuming what. It's still a very, very useful thing. At the end of the year, when your CIO needs to go to the board to fight for his IT budget, he can show them a report that says, look, 50% of our infrastructure is going towards supporting this crappy finance application that's so poorly written that it's taking most of our infrastructure. You want to reduce your IT spend? Tell them to go and fix their app. And then that's real metrics that the CIO can use to sort of have that conversation. So in this example, saying, okay, they've stood up a project to do that. Now, as I said, there's more than one way to do this. So I could just go in through Service Manager and say, yep, let's raise a change to do that. But let's show you another way of doing it. Can't read. Okay. So this is a web portal which interfaces into that system. So I'm going to use this web portal to actually request that new tenant. This is again to start to show you that private cloud is powerful because it's integrating all of these systems and all of these processes together to give you an outcome. So in this particular case, I'm just going to say okay. So new finance app, we're just going to say, okay, how many resources out of the fabric is this project going to take? How much space do we want? Now, it's assuming that the person who's creating this request, and this could be created out of the admin team, right, as well. It doesn't necessarily have to be the person who owns the project for the app. It could be either or. If it's the person who owns the finance app, there would be some conversation, obviously, beforehand for them to say, well, what's an appropriate level? Or he could just go to his engineers and say, this is what we're doing. How much capacity do you think we're going to need? So you could say, okay, we're going to need. Let's just say we as engineers come back and say, right, well, you know, two blades out of the enclosure should be enough. So let's say that those blades have 20 CPUs each. So we can say, okay, I want 40 CPUs. They got 64 gig of RAM each. So two of those. We want 2 terabytes of disk space, and we probably won't be provisioning any more than about 30 VMs. So it's just saying, yep, that's been entered into the system. You'll be contacted with a decision. I didn't come up with that phrasing. Okay, so now if I go into my system here, I go, within this private cloud system that we've built, we've put a custom Wunderbar into Service Manager. All that really is a set of custom views that just slice and dice that data within the Service Manager database to show us what we want. So if I actually go down in here, and this is so hard to read, new tenant requests. What that web page did for us when it said, okay, I want a new tenant in the system, is it automatically raised the change record in Service Manager to say, yep, this change has been raised, I want a new tenant in the system. Now, it can use any template of those approvals that you like. So it can go to one person for approval, it can go to 20 people for approval, depending on what's appropriate for your organization. Now, within this, we simply, in this case, within this implementation, we have one approver, which is the Fabric Administrator, because the main question that he's going to ask himself when this request comes in is, they're asking for X amount of capacity out of my fabric. Do I have that? Do I have that free in order to give to them or not? So if I go into the actual record, I can see here what they've requested. And so I can say, yes, that all looks good. I can give you all that, but I don't have enough disk space right now, so I can give you that, or we might need to go back and say, I don't have enough, can you wait or whatever. Hopefully that wouldn't happen within the way that we do this system, because in my last session I went into how we have the concept of a scale unit, so you always know where your capacity is and you're always provisioning scale units as needed with sufficient lead time so that you always have the capacity there that people require. So
Just with that though, the private the fabric administrator could turn around and go, okay, I actually need some more information on what's coming down, what's the business doing, how that's likely to change over the next couple of months, throughout the duration of this project, what other projects are likely to come. So I've got a picture about how much space and how I might need to divvy that up within this fabric going forward. So that's your cab, yeah, getting that information. So you can do that from the information here, but also establish the cab to get the other people in to help with that decision-making process.
Yeah. Okay, so you can see here that there's a couple of things here that now enable us through these linkages of various configuration items in the system. And this is, again, how the service manager is the brain of this thing, and it really is what allows us to be able to rapidly provision things and gives us that level of process control. Before I mentioned before the notion of a standard change, right? If you're going to delegate the authority for a business unit owner to provision a VM, I mean, that sounds pretty scary, right? Because you just go, well, if you know, these people don't know what they're doing, we could get anything. How are we supposed to support that? This system is set up by the administrators to say, okay, this tenant here that's now being asked for access to the system, okay, well, so firstly, here are the domains that I'm going to let them provision into. So you may have a dedicated test domain or something like that you want that initial system to be provisioned in. You dictate what that tenant has available to them. So you may only give them a choice of one thing, and then you know that it's always going into the right place. You know that mistakes of that kind aren't possible. And you know that when that VM is provisioned, it's provisioned by exactly the same process that you laid down every time with a consistent result. And that's what gives us the ability to be able to delegate that authority. So here we can say associated user roles, which we don't have any of yet. Within our system, we carve it down into two levels of abstraction. There's the tenant at the top level, and then there's the user role. Both quota and ACLs can be set at both of those two levels. So we can say, right, I'm giving you 20% of my fabric to this tenant, and that tenant then has the delegated authority to carve up that quota that they've been assigned however they see fit. So this finance application project might say, okay, well, out of that, I'm going to give 60% of the quota to dev test and 40% of the quota to UAT, as an example. And he can also delegate, he has the power to delegate the authority within that user role, and you're giving that clear delineation of authority. But the system also tracks that. So I'm saying my tenant administrators, you know, who is authoritative for this tenancy? Who has the ability to request user roles, to set quota within those user roles? And then when we look at it from a user role perspective, we can say, right, I can either assign you as an administrator of a user role, which means that you can make requests and, you know, ask for additional quota and those types of things, or I can just make you a consumer of that user role, which just gives you the ability to consume and provision VMs. And I might say you can provision a VM, but you can't delete it, and, you know, you can do both, or, you know, again, however you want to carve that up. Another thing that we can add here is we can say, okay, what clouds do we want this tenant to be able to have access to? So, and a cloud is just a good way of breaking up potential quality of service, for example. Oh. What are you doing to me? There we go. So So we might have like a gold and a silver and a bronze cloud or something like that, and we can say, okay, well, the bronze cloud is backed by low-end storage and it's for dev test, and gold is backed by, you know, high-end storage and it's production, or however we want to carve it up. So it's the linkages of those configuration items with each other that give us that power to be able to say, okay, well, yeah, you can do this and you can't do that. So at the very top, you can see that the status is requested. At this point, I can say, yes, I have the capacity in the fabric to support you. I'm going to approve that request, and you're now a valid tenant within the system. So I can say, yep, in service, or I can say, actually, no, you insulted my dog last week, so you don't get your tenancy. So that's a quick example of how we apply that change and approval process through the being able to then create a tenant within the system. Now, to further that point, when we then create a user role within that system, that authority is delegated to the tenant administrator. they're the ones that have the final authority and also the responsibility to make sure that they're doing, that they're carving out those user roles appropriately and responsibly. The system tracks, it knows who's the owner of who the tenant owner is. It knows when requests are made, and that's not something that needs to go through a manual human approval process. We've made the assumption that the tenant administrator is responsible for their level of quota. If they request a user role to be created within that, then as long as they're within their quota limits, we'll simply allow them to do that in order. The system will auto-approve that request.
So just to review, we haven't gone away from the conventional change process with that. We've still done those things. It's still requested, someone's still making the authorization, we're then deploying it, but it's, and the accountability is defined. We know the decision on the cloud is made by the fabric administrator. We've also devolved that accountability down to a tenant administrator, and we can do that further with user roles down to virtual machine level, which Gareth will do next in the next demo. We can establish the cab at the time we need it. We don't have to wait. There is the mechanisms within Service Manager to be able to call the people in, get their involvement, and we don't have to wait for that standing cab. We maintain process compliance. As Gareth said, one of the issues with process compliance is getting people to jump back and forth between systems whilst they're trying to get something done. It's achieved because it's integrated through the way the change is deployed. We don't have to worry about process compliance, people doing the wrong thing because we've automated it. This is how you do it, and they follow those rules because the tool enforces it. And the technology, and that's the last point. The technology makes sure that we're doing the right things the right way, and the automation helps us out with that. But let's move the scenario on a little bit further. So we've established the project. The project manager's got his tenant within the fabric, and the change manager, he's got a test team within the project that now needs some virtual machines to be able to conduct their testing. So let's move the demo on further and look at how we can provision that virtual machine.
Okay, so again, as I said, there were sort of multiple ways to skin this cat. So what we've again got in this system is our web portal to do various things. So let's go up and have a look at what a provisioning request looks like within that. So you can see here that we have different user roles within this tenant, and it's just telling me, okay, how many VMs have I got within each of those user role? What quota is it consuming? What are its specs? All that kind of stuff, and just give us a top level view of what that looks like. So here's my VM provisioning screen. Now, each one of these items that you see that I'm going to pick from is being pulled by this web portal from Service Manager. So these are all configuration items in Service Manager. And as I said before, it's those linkages between those CIs that then determine what people can see and what they can't. So you have total control over what a tenant slash user role, where they can provision and what they can provision. So you're making those decisions ahead of time. So you can see here, this is my tenant. I've only got, you know, if I had access to more than one tenancy, I could see both. The interface is security context trimmed, so it's only going to show you what you have access to. And then I can pick between my user roles as to where I want to provision that. So what domain am I putting it in? What data center is it going into? What cloud am I using? Again, you can see from those examples, I'm only surfacing one option. So, you know, they don't get a lot of choices to what they get. If choice was appropriate, then choice can be provided. So I'm going to say provision, you know, one, or I could provision multiple VMs. Just going to provision a test virtual machine. Now, what we've also done in the system is given potentially the choice to do a couple of different things with how we construct the specs of that on the fly. I was talking before about standards. It's all about standards. And you need to be able to say, right, we're going to give you, you know, high, medium, low VM. It's kind of all about standards. So there's two ways that we can do that. We can say, we can give you what we call a static VM. And that will basically say, okay, am I provisioning? In this case, we've only got one option, which is a large Windows box. And it's going to, as you see over on the right-hand side there, it's actually said, okay, I'm going to now, that's a preset. So all of the hardware specs with that were predefined, and it's just what you get. For some environments, that might be quite appropriate to say, well, you're only ever going to consume something of this size. That's our standard. That's what we're going to supply you. We know very well how that translates to the amount of quota that we've given you in terms of how many machines that you can provision, and they're the only choices that we're going to give you. You can see there that my request is button is grayed out. I can't do anything there. And that's basically because for that selection, I'm actually over quota, which is a good way of enforcing, how much of the fabric can I consume to your to the tenant. So in that particular example, I'm over quota. So let's go dynamic, so I can actually piece one. This gives me a little bit more flexibility in terms of, okay, what size VM do I want to provision? I'll do a small, keep me under quota. What operating system am I deploying? And again, this is part of the standards that you want to supply. So you saw some Linux examples there. This infrastructure as a service system that we've built as Linux as a first-class citizen in it as well. We've got zero-touch deployment of several Linux distros. If that's a service that you want to supply to your consumers to do a particular thing, then you have the ability to do that. You put it in the system and you say, right, this tenant can see these Linux distros because they want to be able to use them, or no, this business unit has no need for that. I won't surface it to them. It can be there, but they don't necessarily have to see it. So I've picked my size of VM, I've picked my OS. I might want some additional disks supplied of a particular size. And you'll notice what that's done is it's given you a real shopping cart experience in terms that it's dynamically telling you before you decide to make this is about the empowering, again, delegation of that decision-making within the context of this change. I'm displaying to you, before you make the decision to provision that VM, what the implication is going to be for you, both in terms of quota and in terms of monthly cost. If you do internally charge within the organization, so the business unit's going to be paying for this VM to IT that is provisioned, we're telling them this is what it's going to cost you per month. So they know what they're up for before they make the decision to proceed. Okay, give them what networks. This is all about you potentially may want tenant isolation. So to say, okay, project A is only provisioning into VLAN 12, and we have that segmented, and so you've got that network security and isolation. So this is all backed by 2008 R2 Hyper-V because all the requisite things like Service Pack 1 support for System Center and stuff aren't out yet to allow us to really show you something architected for Server 2012. We're working on it. But quick thing to say, 2012, obviously, with the network virtualization gives you very different options in terms of how you do that. But we're sort of still saying, okay, what VLAN is it in for the moment? So I've got that. That's now, this portal's telling me, yes, you're under quota. I have all the information that I need to proceed. So, and in a way, the system's not too different to a change person in that way, saying, do I have all the information I need to be able to proceed with this? In this case, I've supplied everything I need, so I can just go and submit the request there. Now, what the portal's doing is simply now raising a change record in System Center Service Manager, again, complying to that process. So if I go back to Service Manager and then have a look at my views, I was about to say I was getting better at steering this, but... Okay, so let's have a look at submitted VM requests. So you can see that one that we just submitted is now sitting in a submitted state. Now, to keep our agility with private cloud in this context, the system's going to auto-approve that change because we know everything that's that needs to be in place is there. We've got all the information we need. They're within quota. We've delegated that authority for them to be able to do that. So we don't want to inject a human approval process in here. It's going to auto-approve in a second. If you wanted to inject a manual human approval process, you could. Service Manager is very good at doing that. We can introduce a workflow that says, yep, needs to go to, if there's a financial transaction involved, it has to go to that person's manager to be approved before it can be provisioned. You're kind of getting away from the agility, though, of private cloud if you do that. In this context, it'll auto-approve. So that's probably happened by now, so I'll just refresh. No, still sitting there. We have a... there it goes. So now I can see it will be in progress. And it goes. And the advertisement for this is now to give you a view of what's happening, to really emphasise how process is absolutely baked into every stage. This ticket is now the authority of where that job is at and what's happening with it. If you want to know where the job is at, you look in Service Manager and look at the ticket. So this VM provisioning system goes through a lot of stages, okay? And there's multiple decision points within. We have Orchestrator grinding away in the background, running through a provisioning workflow. Because anyone who's done a lot of serving provisioning knows, okay, you can provision the VM from a template perspective. Wahoo, big deal. That's not everything that I need to do in order to facilitate the creation of this virtual machine. I might need to deploy management agents, deploy backup agents, you know, make sure antivirus is squared away, make sure the thing's fully patched. It may be, I mean, certainly with the scale of our virtual disks and performance now, you shouldn't really have to do pass-through disks anymore. But you might have a circumstance to say, well, this is a SQL box, and I'm going to provision a LUN on the fly and direct attach it to that VM, whereas something you may have previously had to go to the storage guys for. We automate that end-to-end process so we get a consistent result out the back door. But the idea then is every time that goes through, you want to be updating the ticket so it knows where it's at. So, yes, I've approved, so I'm going to mark the ticket approved. Next stage, deploy the template. I'm going to mark it, the ticket. Yep. I'm now deploying that template. When that template's complete, I'll mark the job complete, move on to the next stage, I'll mark the job complete. So every stage of the process, the system is going back and updating the ticket. So every time you look at the ticket, you know you're looking at a real-time representation of where that job is at. Now, if you had to do that, there's no way that process is going to be followed manually. No way. If you had to go back and update the ticket every time you went through one of those processes, people simply aren't going to do it because it's just too arduous. The system does it for you, and that process updating of that ticket record is baked in. The other thing that I'll emphasize as well is that through that provisioning process, it's a complex process. There's multiple products being involved, and they're all talking to each other and handing over it at different stages. If that goes bad somewhere in that process, it can be very, very difficult to troubleshoot. And typically when you have deployment systems that involve multiple, you know, that touch multiple products, typically you've had to have people who really know how that deployment system works and every single stage in it, because when they see that something's gone wrong, they'll go and look at the state that the thing's in and go, ah, yep, I know that was in between stages 5 and 6. I know exactly where that's gone wrong. Well, that's great if you've got people who know the system that well and have that kind of intellectual property, but it's not a really sustainable way of doing things because, you know, people leave, not everything's documented, you know, that sort of stuff happens. So what we built into this system to really make it sustainable is there's a huge amount of error checking and trapping that goes in within our orchestrator workflows. Any stage of the process fails, it's going to trap it, it's going to log it, and it's going to, guess what, go out to Service Manager and say, mark the ticket has failed, and raise an incident report automatically in Service Manager. So you know, your admins know, oh, this provisioning process failed. It failed at this stage with this error. It failed deploying the Ops Manager agent because server not found or whatever reason, okay? So that gives us the ability then, because of the ticket, where the ticket is in Service Manager and the way we've worked that into our Orchestrator runbooks, we can then say, okay, I know why it failed. The, you know, someone shut down the Ops Manager server instead of logging off it. It was down. That's why we couldn't get any service. I've now fixed that up. I can restart that job, and I can say I want to restart it from the beginning. I can restart it from the last stage that failed, or I can skip that stage and resume it from the next stage. So it gives us a lot of flexibility and power to be able to provide that consistent level of service to our service consumers, and the change process is baked in.
One of the other things too is that Service Manager and other system center products, data warehousing, the SQL databases behind that, which means we can search all of this and get accurate reporting. Gareth talks about a number of different views and custom views we've got in there. We can still get all of that reporting on changes that have gone on, how many have errored, even why they've errored, as Gareth was talking about, how many we've put through. We can confirm. We can also, as a result, confirm that we've got this level of compliance with our changes. Yeah, so that's another advantage of the overall System Center suite.
So what I was just quickly going to show you, where is it? I And this is an example of that sort of data warehousing. And that's simply pulling that from the service manager data warehouse in terms of my relative resource consumption based on my tenant and you know, which user roles are consuming how much of my quota and how much out of my fabric. We also have a number of built-in reports that leverage SQL Server reporting services. So again, as Mark said, all that's in the data warehouse, and you can slice and dice that data any way that you see fit. If you want to know, okay, how many auto-approved VMs were provisioned in the last 6 months, yeah, it's dead easy to get that information out of the system and very quickly.
All right, so just to recap on that last demo, some of the things we saw there, again, further devolution of the accountability, the setting up the user role and then allocating the virtual machine to that user role. The customized workflows, maintain that compliance, also build in all of those other things that we can automate. The provisioning of the machine, make sure that all those security aspects and vulnerability aspects, patching, all that sort of stuff, things that we need, setting up the backups, are all done as a part of that. So that maintains the compliance with what's needed. We maintain the benefits of private cloud. I provision machines quickly. I get people up and doing what they need to without the process getting in the way, which is the big thing that we want from this, to make sure that the process, it helps enable the benefits we're after, doesn't stop them being achieved. The last thing for me is the application. We did the scenario that we painted was a project. But the same process provided for managing that change within the project is the same as operations, which makes it much easier for people to work with. There's not two different ways of doing something depending on what I'm doing at the time. For me, which might sound ironic, I mean, as a person who works with and helps organisations put in processes and put in process controls, I love this because it gets it out of the way. It's nice to have my work front and centre, but if my work's front and centre, it means that people who've got their job to do are being pushed to the background, and I don't want that. If I can put change with it, if we can bake change management in or those other processes that give us that control and put it in the background so it becomes exception reporting rather than being in your face, then I'm deliriously happy, strangely enough. Other things make me happy, but that job perspective, that's what I'm after. And that's what this does. It makes it an integral part, provides us the control, but it's not front and centre. The job that our IT pros are doing, the benefits we're trying to get from private cloud are maintained and are what the business sees as benefit rather than a bureaucratic process that seems to stifle the way they want to operate.
I'd also say from an IT pro perspective, the interesting thing to keep in mind is that through those demos, apart from making sure that the fabric had the required capacity to approve that tenant request, I didn't do anything other than that. You know, all the rest of the authority was delegated down. It was the system that was doing all of that provisioning work for me. Sure, I'm integral in setting that up and making sure it's automated properly and getting the results we want. But then once it's running, it really kind of chugs away and looks after itself. And if there is an error, then I'm going to be very quickly notified about it in a very efficient manner. So I can, you know, after that setup, I can spend my time doing other things that are of greater benefit to the business, like, you know, going and getting a cup of coffee and jumping on some online forums and arguing about how bad the end of Battlestar Galactica was. You know, these really important things that as an IT pro I want to go and do. We've got some related content up there in terms of some of the other sessions and hands-on labs and various other things. We will be in the speaker lounge from 11 to 11:30 if you want to come up and have a chat. And then at 11:30, I've got a race up here because in rooms 5 and 6, I'm doing a session on Orchestrator runbook authoring best practices. So if you're interested in Orchestrator and how we construct those runbooks, I'm actually going to be using that system as an example, showing you the runbooks that are in there and how we've put them together. So it's a good example of the best practices as to how you author your runbooks.
The first one there is the how to architect the private cloud was a session Gareth ran before. So if you didn't attend that, when the content's available next week, download and have a look at that.
Okay, so from that point now, we've got a few little bit of time left, about 5 minutes before we have to run down to the speaker lounge. So happy to take any questions that anybody has. No? Tumbleweed. Oh, there's one.
Yep.
Yes, potentially. we would think about... I get where your question's going. The question when I show this system, the question I get asked all the time is, we have an existing product that we use for service desk or service management. Can we pull service manager out and put our one in? In the context of the whole solution, we say no, because service manager is so integral to all of the integration of how everything works. If we were to pull it out, you could make it work with another system using Orchestrator, but the integration time it would cost you is so counterproductive to that, we wouldn't recommend you do it. But what you could do is leave Service Manager in there as the brain of this system, and if you need to go and then create a CI or create an equivalent change in another system, then work that into the Orchestrator runbooks to say, yep, okay, I've gone and flagged it over here in Service Manager, and I'll go over here and do it in this other system. So if you are in a circumstance, I mean, it sounds really inefficient, and it is to a degree, if you're in a situation of having to maintain multiple systems, and that's not uncommon, especially if you're migrating from one to another, there's going to be a period where you're trying to maintain both, then that automation and orchestrator is critical to being able to do that effectively. If you're relying on people to keep those things in sync, never going to happen. You need to rely on the automation to do that for you.
If I understand your question about the data and stuff, because it's all stored in a data warehouse, then whatever reporting system you want to do and aggregate that with another system for reporting purposes, yeah, that's more than possible as well.
Yeah, potentially. The way that we showed you that portal that we have is one way of getting data into the system. I mean, ultimately, what we're doing is we want a ticket in a system that has all of the information that we need for the automation to be able to pick up and go on, right, I've got A, B, and C. I'm going to go down this path. So, as an example of how you would build something like that on the System Center stack. Yeah, absolutely. And Orchestrator is the secret source of that. That's whatever your front end is, if it's a change ticket in whatever system, if that's the way you're entering it, as long as there's something that Orchestrator can go and read and get all of the variables that it needs for the decisions that it needs to make, then you've got it. Yep, on the back. There are potentially other ways of doing that, depending on where your hosting platform is. Our front end that we've authored there is really tailored to virtual machines. But again, it's just all about information that's in the record, right? If you want to deploy an application post VM deployment, yeah, as long as that information is in the ticket in some way that is read in a meaningful way by Orchestrator. No reason why you can't say, okay, I'm deploying application A to this VM. I'll go and put it in the collection in Config Manager, for example, to go and push that app down. Yeah, absolutely. Very possible.
With the applications, obviously, you can't avoid where you're building. You still got to do that build and stabilize part. But what I think you're talking about is if you've got a standard way for deploying it, so yeah, most definitely. You've got to go through those steps, make sure that's all right, and that's probably going to need some level of human approval before you get to that. But once that's done, push it out through the automation, deployed the same way every time. Here's my standardized pilot group. It goes to that group first, get the information back, and then I can do the full deployment. So most definitely. Yep. If it's a standardized way of doing it, which is what we're after, a standardized method of implementing the change, then yeah, most definitely.
Yeah, I mean, this infrastructure as a service is purely an example. I mean, the key takeaways are having the automation within your ticketing system to make sure that your process and approvals and the records are kept up to date, and then using Orchestrator to automate that process in. So you could have something in your ticket that says, okay, when it's at this stage, then it's going to kick off a workflow within Service Manager to get those approvals that you need to say, right, it's past the dev stage, I need it now, need approval to deploy into UAT. If that's a standard way of doing it, and you've got standard people who have a vested interest in that change, you have those list of people within your Service Manager template, and that process just kicks off. So yeah, very much so. Anything else? Okay, well, we've got to run down to the speaker's lounge now, so we'll be there if anyone else wants to come up and have a chat. Thank you very much for your time, and enjoy the rest of TechEd.
Thank you.